Well, hello everyone, and welcome to FYI on this fourth Tuesday of the month. We are here with Plant-Based OKC to hopefully elevate your thinking today.
And just share plant-based love.
Absolutely. That's right. That's what we're always here for.
Yeah.
I am Andrea Conway, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Jimmy Conway.
Hello, everyone.
And our good friend and plant-based evangelist, Randy Titone.
Can I just interrupt this program for a second?
Please.
Because it is just a crying shame that this is radio only.
That they can't see our beautiful faces
because
today.
Because you two today look unbelievable.
Yeah, well, you know why that is? It's the good eating that we do.
It's the power of plants.
It's the power of plants.
Amen.
So those of you that are new to our show, that we are here every fourth Tuesday talking about nutrition. And we talk about the benefits of eating a whole food, plant-based diet to prevent and reverse chronic disease. And I think there's just so much out there today that is confusing, and people get frustrated with not knowing what's up and what's down. And
misinformation.
Misinformation, definitely, that is out there. And so our mission is to impart an unbiased scientific approach to the power of food and why whole foods can do what they do. And so you can follow us at plantbasedokc.com, and you can get information about what we do on a regular basis and listen to previous broadcasts from this show on our website. You can get information about the free seminars that we do. Everything we do related to plant-based nutrition is free of charge. We feel like it is so important to get this information to the public, so we don't want anyone to not be able to access this. So we do seminars on Saturday afternoons at a hospital in South Oklahoma City, Community Hospital, which is located at 3100 Southwest 89th Street. You can get the date and sign up for these seminars at plantbasedokc.com. But our next one is April 22nd. And so you can we do require an RSVP because we do have limited room size, and I do provide a plant-based lunch. So if you can...
Bet she cooks herself.
I do cook it myself. I want to share the plant-based love with everyone and show what kind of that good, tasty foods you can have eating this way.
She even fed the Buddhist monks a good old Oklahoma vegan meal last week.
Recently at our church, the Tibetan monks come every year to build a sand mandala, and the monks are vegan, and so they rely on donated food, and this is the second year in a row I've been able to cook for them, and they really seem to enjoy a home-cooked meal since most of their food is typically, you know, donated by a restaurant or something. So we did get to cook and show them that what a good old-fashioned plant-based Southern Oklahoma meal might look like.
I'll
and
bet they loved it.
They enjoyed that. The other thing we do that you can join us for is our meeting at Rococo Restaurant, which is in North Park Mall at 122nd and North May. This is a meeting that we started because we've been doing these seminars for, gosh, probably 5 years now, 4 years, something like that. And people would come to the seminar here and be inspired to make a change in their lifestyle. But then they would leave us and they would have questions about what to do next or how to cook or just various things. And they wanted to be around other people that were in the same boat, wanting to eat this way and not knowing what to do maybe to continue down their path and just have support. So we started this support group at Rococo, and so we are there on the first Monday of every month. So we'll actually be there this coming Monday, which is April 3rd. These are at 6 o'clock p.m. on the first Monday of every month. Rococo Restaurant does provide a plant-based menu, but you're not required to buy dinner. If you want to just come and participate in the question and answer session and talk to others that are eating this way, you can certainly join us that night. No reservation is required. It's just really a first come, first serve. So we'd love to see anyone there that would like to join us for that meeting. So let's just get started on our program today. And I want to start with, I always read the, I guess it's the health and living section of the Daily Oklahoman. And I like to see the questions that are posed. There's always something health related in there. And today something caught my eye that I'd like for Dr. Conway to discuss. But I just want to read this. There was a section that says, "Don't fall for those April fools." And it has these supposed myths that you don't need to fall for. And so one of them I thought was very interesting. So myth number 3, limit your intake of eggs. So that was the myth. And so this was the response. The idea that eggs and other high cholesterol foods are dangerous is a long-held belief. But, said Prescott, the gentleman who wrote this article, I guess, unless you're in a small minority of people who are hypersensitive to dietary cholesterol, there's no evidence that eating high cholesterol foods increases a person's risk of heart disease. A recent analysis of data gathered from a study of 9,000 people found that reducing cholesterol in the diet actually correlated with increased mortality levels. Eggs are a great source of protein, so if you like them, there's really no reason to limit your intake.
That small group of people that he was talking about are called humans.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this gentleman has fallen for the propaganda that the egg board has put
forth. Right.
I mean, because the science definitely does not show that eating eggs is very harmful to humans. And it doesn't matter what category of egg consumption that you fall into, the more eggs you eat, the higher risk of dying of both all-cause mortality and dying of heart disease. And a lot of misinformation has been put forth by the egg board because in the 90s and early 2000s, egg consumption decreased considerably. And so what they did in response was essentially buy scientists to put out studies saying this nonsense.
Well, what's interesting about just about that in and of itself is that these companies, whether it's the egg board, the beef board, which I didn't know there were so many boards out there, but there's all kinds of boards for milk and cattle and eggs or whatever it might be, they can run all these scientific research studies but only have to publish the one that might show something that's in their favor. There might be, out of 20 studies, 19 that show a harmful result, but they're not required to pass on that information. They can just share the one that had a positive result.
That's
which
correct.
I find disturbing.
It's research fraud, actually. And the egg board has been sued a number of times because of their propaganda that they basically buy. Certain scientists work with the egg board, and unfortunately, two of them are on the council that decides what's healthy for humans to eat from the USDA. So two of the members of that group of supposed scientists are basically egg board members. And so the recent guidelines came out in 2015 that where they did not, they removed the limitation on dietary cholesterol from the recommendations, but then they stated that that does not mean that eating high cholesterol food is healthy, that we should still limit it.
Well, that,
and that,
I mean,
was
that
in response
so
to
confusing.
A lawsuit.
I don't even understand that statement.
I mean, is that the intent?
I guess that's the intent.
That is
just
the intent, to keep you confused.
Yeah, I don't even understand that.
And so what does the science show? Well, there's a chemical that is in eggs that is called dietary choline. Eggs are rich sources of choline. Well, so what does eating choline do to you? Well, it changes the bacteria in your intestines to bacteria that like to use choline as a fuel, and it ferments this molecule. And one of the byproducts is a chemical that was just discovered in 2012, and it is called trimethylamine N-oxide. So trimethylamine is produced by these bacteria. It's a gas. Then it's transformed in the liver to trimethylamine N-oxide. And this chemical has been shown to increase cholesterol deposition, to stiffen your arterial wall, to increase your risk of having heart disease. It changes how our body responds to cholesterol. And there is a blood test where you can actually measure your trimethylamine N-oxide level. And the test is available from the Cleveland Clinic. I know it is done here in Oklahoma City because I've seen the results. And so eating eggs increases trimethylamine N-oxide, which is going to increase your risk of disease.
You know what I find so funny is the egg board and some of these people who pay thousands of scientists all around the world to do jaded research, and that is that most of Americans eat eggs, most of Americans eat meat, most of Americans eat dairy, and yet the number one killer in America is heart disease, and the number two killer is cancer. And I'm like, right. And those foods have been shown to promote heart disease and cancer. You know, you don't need to do a bunch of bogus research to understand. Maybe you ought to just quit eating those things.
Maybe.
You know, how many times do you got to hit your thumb with a hammer before you go, yeah, this really does hurt, I should stop doing that?
You think it would be common sense, but what Will Rogers said was the problem with common sense is it ain't that
so common.
That's
right.
You know, and just with things like cholesterol and, you know, and until, well, most people, unless they have an issue, don't go in and just have blood work necessarily
right.
done. So you're going along in life not really knowing maybe what your cholesterol is. Then we have these norms in America for what cholesterol should be based on not really what it should be normal, what range should be normal,
right.
but what they think is acceptable based on the population. So I think the range for high is maybe...
It's over 200 milligrams per deciliter.
But what is it they consider normal? I think it's
under,
like...
Under 200. 200
But I think
100.
There's even, like, I think it's like 160 to 1 to 200 or something like that.
Right.
Which, but the studies show that it has to be even below that.
Right. To reduce your risk of dying of a heart attack.
Yes.
It needs to be below 150.
So... But we don't even talk about that in the United States, really.
Well, no, because we don't talk about what causes heart disease.
Because I mean, there's no 150 cholesterol board.
That's right. You don't get paid for having a cholesterol
right.
under 150.
Yeah,
that's
I mean
right.
the pharmaceutical industry and everybody doesn't want you to know that or how you can get it to that point.
I told this little joke at the health forum when you all were out of town last month, that guy goes to the doctor and he says, well, we either need to put you on a really strict diet or you're going to need to have bypass. And the guy said, well, I'm probably going to need to have bypass then because my insurance won't pay for a really strict diet. And that's what we
That's
what we've come to expect.
But what I was saying is, you know, most people may not even know what their cholesterol is, or they go in and they have it run and it's so, you know, say it's 190.
Right.
Their doctor tells them, you know, they may want to start, I don't even know.
Eating Greek yogurt.
You know, may want to start eating a little more low fat because it's getting up there. And if it gets over 200, you're going to have to be on, you know, some kind of statin. But you don't really get much information. But all the time that your cholesterol is up there, damage is being done. And people don't realize that what's happening in their bodies until an event happens. I mean,
well, that's true.
You know, I just think about diabetes. You know, there's people on medication for pre-diabetes and they say, oh, I'm not diabetic because I take this medicine.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
or I'm diabetic, but I don't take insulin, so I can
eat whatever I want.
Right? Yeah. And it's, you know, but until they act like This just came up when I was working with a lady and helping her, you know, to start to eat better. And, you know, her comment was that, you know, I said to her, you know, the symptoms of diabetes may not come out until at whatever point you have an episode of a low sugar or high sugar or whatever, and then you go and have your blood run and find out what your levels are. But to get to that point, your body has been undergoing all these damaging,
right,
you know, issues for years and years and years. It didn't just happen yesterday.
Right.
You know, and so
that's why we call it chronic disease.
That's what's, you know, so people don't want to change their ways until an event happens. And by then, you could have done so much damage to your body.
Or that, as we've said many times, in 50% of the cases, the first symptom of heart disease is death. Then
it's a little late.
I wish I would have known before. I'm like,
you know, this advertisement that was on right before we came on about the fact that African American men have such a high risk of heart disease. They also have a very high risk of colon cancer.
Right.
And African Americans in the United States have a 100% or 100 times greater risk of dying of colon cancer than a black South African. 100 mm-hmm. times. And so what's the difference in the food? Well, they don't eat a lot of meat in South Africa. But they eat a lot of processed food now.
That's right.
So they used to think it was the fact that the food wasn't processed. But evidently,
it's processed,
still not eating a lot of meat.
Yeah.
Because meat is expensive. Meat would be very expensive in the United States if it wasn't subsidized.
Well, all those products, milk, cheese, right, eggs, meat, everything would be very expensive if it wasn't subsidized.
So we're paying by our taxes,
yes,
to promote this food that has been shown without question to be the leading cause of the two biggest killers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's somewhere like 8 of the top 10 are foodborne illnesses. And so the only one that's not is number 3 on the list, and that's dying in a hospital due to a medical error, or which being hospitalized is the third leading cause of death in the United States, between 220 and 440,000 people a year, and 106,000 of those are people that are given the right drug for the right indication,
right,
for the right reason, and they have a reaction and die.
That's why you see all those
side effects
on commercials for drugs, because somebody had one of those side effects from taking that drug. So the best thing is to not have to take that drug in the first place, and then you don't have to worry about possible side effect of death.
You know, except for an acute illness that requires an antibiotic or something in an emergency, you know, how often do we go to the doctor and say, is there anything that I can do to keep from taking this medication?
Right.
And
well, we're not conditioned to think that way.
Correct.
We're conditioned to think, well, I need a pill for this ill.
And so oftentimes, if you think about it, you go to the doctor, so you have to take off work, you have to drive there, you have to sit in the waiting room, you have to pay a copay, then you have to sit in the waiting room in the doctor's office. By the time he gets there, you don't want to hear that you have a virus. You know?
Right.
You're thinking, I came all this way, I paid a copay, I want a medication. And then we wonder why people aren't getting better and they've been given so many antibiotics. You know, oftentimes now that I've become a lot more educated, I tell people, when you go to the doctor, you need to understand and let your doctor know that you're not there to get an antibiotic. You're there to be convinced that you need an antibiotic.
Right.
Because I don't want to take it if I don't need it.
Well, but the sad thing about how healthcare has evolved is that doctor is going to be reimbursed on patient outcomes.
Right.
And part of that is a self-reported thing that the federal government requires. And so if you go to the doctor and you're feeling sick and it's due to a virus and you don't get an antibiotic, which you don't need an antibiotic,
right,
for a virus, antibiotics do not treat viruses, but that doctor's likely to have a lower rating because they don't dispense all the drugs. So it's like it's a system that is rigged to get the exact results that we're getting.
Right.
And that is true.
But with all the advertising for pharmaceuticals on our TV, I mean, oh my gosh, it's just between fast food and pharmaceuticals, that's the only, you know, commercials that are on TV, it seems like, anymore. And, you know, and it's go ask your doctor for this.
That's what I say.
The three most hated words
in your doctor's office, ask your doctor.
Or I saw this on TV.
Yes. Yeah.
And so people are diagnosing themselves.
Right.
Or they're saying, I know better. And so I know, you know, this said that this is going to cure my whatever. I need to have this medication. The doctors aren't the ones deciding that this is what's best for you.
Another little research tidbit or scientific tidbit. You know, out of about 196 countries in the world, there's only two countries that allow direct-to-consumer advertising by the pharmaceutical industry.
Us and New Zealand.
New Zealand. You know, look how small New Zealand is.
Yeah.
Why? I just don't understand that.
Yeah.
And again, well, it's called
money.
Lobby.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the pharmaceutical industry is the largest lobby in Washington, D.C.
Sure.
They're not interested in healthy people.
No.
That's not going to fund their profit sharing programs, and it's not going to fund their bottom line. They want sick people. And they want sick people that's on a prescription forever.
Correct.
They don't want a short-term prescription.
Right.
Why do you think there aren't new antibiotics by the dozens?
Yeah, you're on the antibiotic for a week, 10
Because you're on the antibiotic
days.
For two weeks at most, you know?
Yeah.
And then you don't use it again.
Right, right.
There's not a big profit.
Sure.
But you get on a statin.
Oh, goodness.
And they've lowered the indication. What you were saying about cholesterol levels, there are guidelines now for people to be put on these statins. They've really expanded the range for people to be on statins. And statins aren't all evil. So, yeah, some people do have some reactions to them.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some evidence that if a person's on a statin, they actually have a lower risk of having a rotator cuff tear. So there's something that it's helping with tendons. What it's probably doing is getting rid of the cholesterol deposits in the tendon.
So that there's more blood flow.
Right.
Well, and certainly, you know, even so, back to our story, and the reason we even do what we do is because, you know, you had a cholesterol of 494 and triglycerides of 3,200, told you needed triple bypass, you know, and we opted for some non-invasive treatment, you know.
It's radical.
It was very radical thinking.
We changed what we ate.
And so you were on a statin for a while. And so, yes, I do think, you know, we do see people we work with that want to change their diet and do some things, but they have these, you know, 300 level cholesterols or something. And I think there is a need for that in the beginning to try to help get that down quickly.
I do too. But I'm not saying there's no need for,
but it's not something you should have to do for the rest of your life. You should be able to do it to help get at that point while you're working on your diet.
So what happens? It takes a while for your arteries to heal themselves. What most people don't realize is that with every meal, we assault our arteries if you're eating a standard American diet. And it's assaulted by added oil in this high-fat food that we eat as part of the standard American diet. And so it takes a while. Once you start not assaulting your arteries, it takes a while for the arteries in your body to heal. You have more miles of arteries in your body, I think it could circle the earth like 6 times. So there are lots of blood vessels in your body, and all of them have been damaged, not just the ones in your heart.
I know, that's what I find. It's not really funny. I shouldn't use that word.
Ironic
that people think that the only place they're going to have issues with, you know, their arteries is around their heart, and they don't realize it's affecting every
artery
in their entire body, you know. That's why there's strokes. That's why there's rotator cuff tears. That's why there's
disc herniations.
Discs in the back.
Well, and then when you think of the
even kidney issues, because
correct.
Of, you know, I mean,
the arteries in the male genitalia that are responsible for impotency. I mean,
right.
So now,
the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine has called Meat Week ED Week.
Sure, sure.
Because they're tied together.
And if you think about how small the arteries are that feed the penis, the people that are going to the doctor saying, I have impotency, right away it should be a red flag for physicians, you know?
Right. And it has become that now.
Yeah.
So most people are aware that ED is significantly associated with risk of heart mm-hmm. disease. Well, it's actually the same disease. And all of those vascular problems can be halted if you quit the assault on the arteries.
Sure.
Even something like macular degeneration.
And Alzheimer's.
Yes.
So now, will it reverse severe Alzheimer's? I don't know, but it's
no,
certainly
but it
early
could,
stages.
Yeah, early, definitely start to slow the effects of that. I mean, when you're seeing people with early onset Alzheimer's, early onset in their 50s.
Right.
That's...
Somebody that's 80 isn't early onset.
Right. We are Plant-Based OKC. I hope you've been listening to us today and learning some good information about nutrition and food. And I didn't mention this on the first half of the show, but if you're listening and you do have any questions, please feel free to call us at 672-1220 because we're always happy to take some questions on air and answer them. But we were talking about cholesterol and medications and everything that we're dealing with today in society.
Would this be a good time for me to educate people on how eating a Twinkie a day could lower their cholesterol?
Yeah.
I think that would be worthwhile.
A nice segue
for
that. Well, there's been some research done, and let me tell you exactly how a Twinkie lowers your risk of heart disease by lowering your cholesterol. And that is that the people that make Twinkies did a study, and what they did was, since there are 2.5 grams of saturated fat in a Twinkie, they found people that ate the competitor, which are Little Debbie Cloud Cakes. Little Debbie Cloud Cakes only have 1 gram of saturated fat apiece. So those people were eating 5 grams of saturated fat a day. So they cut those people from eating 5 grams of saturated fat a day to eating 1 Twinkie a day. Okay?
Wow.
So in theory, the research showed that eating 1 Twinkie a day lowered their cholesterol. They didn't talk about they were eating 4 less
Little
dessert
Debbie.
Products than previously. So what did the beef industry do? The beef industry grabbed a hold of this and came up with the BOLD study, which is beef in an optimal lean diet. What they did was they introduced beef into people's diet that previously hadn't eaten beef, but they had eaten so much poultry, pork, fish, and cheese that their saturated fat intake went from 12% of their diet down to 6% of their diet. What did they do? They lowered their cholesterol rate, and they showed that eating beef in is an optimal lean diet. So what does that mean? That means that what I've been saying all along, to quote the great philosopher John Mayer, when they own the information, they can bend it all they want.
That's true.
You know?
Well, this.
Well,
yeah.
I remember seeing that study on beef.
Right.
We walked into some seminar, and they had a huge poster touting that.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I think we have a caller if we want to take that caller real quick. Sure. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I've got a question on cholesterol.
Let's hear it.
If your primary care doctor has told you that no matter if you're a triathlon athlete with 4% body fat, you'll always have a genetic disposition to high cholesterol, and you'll always be on a statin. So when you go to a plant-based diet, at what point in time do you know that you don't need the statin anymore?
It's kind of trial and error. So in my situation, when I went from eating everything to going totally plant-based, within 6 months, my cholesterol had dropped to 115. And so I had been taking cholesterol medicine at that time. So I just basically took myself off of it and followed my cholesterol. And, you know, last time I had both checked, cholesterol and triglycerides, both were under 100 on no medicine. So doctors are misinformed when it comes to genetics. We, especially if you are, you know, a little bit older, the genetics I was taught in medical school was what I refer to as genetic determinism. That is that your genes determine everything about you. What we found out is you can actually change your genetics based on what you eat. And what we know about cells, the cells in our body, the genes direct things, but they direct things basically based on the information that they get from the cell membrane. And it's the cell membrane actually that controls everything. And so if your cells are in a healthy environment, they're going to be a lot healthier.
Well, obviously you were genetically predisposed to having high triglycerides and high cholesterol.
That's correct.
Based on the diet you were eating. But once you change that,
genetic,
the statin didn't take it from 494 to 115.
No, that's never been, statins have never been shown to decrease by 400%. That was diet. And so diet trumps everything. Diet trumps, for the vast majority of us, diet trumps genetics. There may be a small segment that has a genetic problem that diet is not going to trump. And that has to do with some recent studies involving some kind of obscure chemicals that I'm not going to get into. But that's a very small percentage of humans. For most of us, I'm talking 99.9% of us, the diet is going to trump the genetics.
So I had heard that there's some controversies of taking a statin. So are there scientific evidence of side effects of taking a statin?
Oh, yes. Yes, there's a lot of scientific evidence. So there's silent muscle disease. So if you're on a statin, you need to periodically have what's called a CPK drawn to make sure your muscles aren't being affected by it. It increases risk of Alzheimer's, and some of that is irreversible. And so, I mean, statins, there are side effects associated with taking them, but the side effects of, you know, the heart disease that most of us take the statins for is also pretty significant, so you kind of have to weigh the risks.
But I think, as we mentioned earlier, that taking the statin in the beginning, along with your change in diet until you can get your cholesterol lowered, and going back to your doctor, having some blood work done and having that checked, and then working with your doctor to get off of those medications is the best route to take.
And some people find a lot of resistance by physicians to the idea that changing your diet is going to change your risk. And so, you know, if your physician is someone who is not real receptive to that message, I think I would find another physician. And it's becoming a lot more mainstream, changing disease risk with diet.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call. Well, I think that's a lot of people's question, though, too. And what we suggest when changing your diet, you know, when we started this path, you were on three different blood pressure medications. You were on a statin. I mean, we didn't just immediately drop those. But
correct.
I tell people, when you're changing your diet, you know, get a home blood pressure cuff. Check your blood pressure on a regular basis. Monitor that. And take those results to your doctor. Go have blood work done every 3 months or so. And tell your doctor you're working to get off of those medications.
I can't tell you how many physicians have been educated on the power of food by a patient.
Right.
So we go to this international healthcare, plant-based healthcare conference, and a lot of doctors there state that they were influenced heavily by a patient's results of going plant-based. And so the patient can educate the doctor.
Absolutely. We all, people that have come to us and that are starting this and, you know, want to know if there, unfortunately, there aren't a lot of what I would call plant-based doctors. I mean, the doctors out there that encourage this way of eating or know a lot about it, but, you know, take information to them. When we have our seminars, we provide a lot of data to people, and we encourage you, if you're wanting to work with your doctor on getting off medication, please don't hesitate to share some of those materials with your doctor.
Well, and now it's a little easier as well because they have data and we have research that you can just hand to your doctor, or, you know, encourage them to watch Forks Over Knives or Eating You Alive instead of just saying, hey, I've been eating this way and I feel good, you know.
Well, and, you know, if it were me and if I did that and a doctor was not receptive and said, I don't care what this, you know, I would find another doctor.
Absolutely.
Because there are doctors out there that are willing to work with you if that's, you know, I think that's, they're so used to their patients not being interested in something like that, that maybe that's just not what they've known previously, but they can be open to that information. You know, it was interesting, you know, this kind of just goes back to our whole things are happening in your body until they actually manifest themselves in some kind
right.
of episode. But we had a gentleman in our last seminar that his statement during the seminar was, what if I'm not having any of these issues?
Yet.
Am I just genetically basically superior that I don't have to worry about this? Because I didn't get into detail with him in front of everybody in the seminar, but I assume he probably, by our standards, have high cholesterol. And so that was his kind of marker to say, I don't have these issues. So
I didn't have them either for the first 53 years of my life.
Right.
That I knew about.
Right.
It was once it became symptomatic. And with me, it was left arm pain that developed one day that kind of got my attention. But, you know, I knew I had had high blood pressure, but I'd been taking that three different antihypertensives. My blood pressure on a good day was 160 over 100, which is high.
I have to assume, though, he probably was not on any medications at that point in his life, but he was a pretty young gentleman.
Correct.
So at what point do you believe that things could be happening in your body and be... and wake up and say, I don't want to get to the point where I'm told I have prediabetes, or I'm told, you know, I need a blood pressure medication, or I need a statin.
You know, I would say it occurs to some people when a friend drops dead of a heart attack.
Sure.
Somebody they thought was healthy in their 30s and they dropped dead of a heart attack. What I've recently discovered is colon cancer, which used to be a very elderly disease, is now being seen in 20 and 30-year-olds.
Right.
Yeah, there was, again, an article in Sunday's paper, Sunday's Daily Oklahoman. It was about a girl that was 36 years old that had been diagnosed with colon cancer.
And so, you know.
And so it's just... people are getting younger and younger, and you have to at some point realize what is happening in our society, that all these things that weren't happening to people until they were in their 70s and 80s is happening to people in their 30s and 40s.
And I always say it's, you know, I wonder if it's the food or if it's what we've done to the food. The antibiotics, the growth hormones, the GMOs, the pesticides.
I think it's a combination
of all
probably.
Of it.
But, you know, the argument that, well, my grandparents lived to be 95 is just not an argument, in my opinion.
No,
your grandparents didn't live in the world we live
that's
in
right.
today.
And that's the exception. That's not the rule.
Yeah. You know? I mean, you know, like you said in the seminar on Saturday, you're going to find that outlier who's
of course
had their 100th birthday or whatever and said, I ate, you know, bacon every
and
morning.
Smoked but, five packs of cigarettes
right,
a day.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, my grandparents smoked every day,
sure.
and they lived to be 85. That doesn't mean that I think smoking is healthy and that I'm going to go start smoking
right.
tomorrow.
Right.
So, and you know, what's interesting is with smoking, I mean, most people today, I mean, smoking has kind of become, I mean, I don't have any personal close friends that you know, most of my friends don't smoke. I mean, I may have one or two, but, you know, smoking is one of those things that kind of is a no-no. Everybody knows, you know, smoking causes cancer. They don't want to do that. But at some point, our food is going to be thought of in that same manner.
Sure.
But I think that the time is coming because the evidence is overwhelming that we're basically killing ourselves with what we eat. And that, you know, in the 1950s, there were thousands of studies that said smoking was bad, but it wasn't until 1964, I think, the Surgeon General came out and said smoking causes cancer.
Right.
And it was after like 7,000 studies, as Dr. Greger has to say.
The first two or three or four didn't do it.
The first 6,000 didn't do it. But the 7,000th study, it was okay, though. Evidence is overwhelming that this stuff causes cancer.
Well, we've already gotten to the point where the World Health Organization has listed processed bacon. Meats.
Which is bacon, sausage.
Bacon, you know, bologna, hot dogs.
Hot dogs.
As a class one carcinogen, like cigarettes.
And asbestos.
You know, but you still, you know, but it's still so mainstream on every show I watch, you know, I watch the morning news shows and they have a cooking segment and about every other day they're cooking something with bacon.
Sure.
I mean, that's still just so mainstream that no one thinks twice about.
Well, it's so addictive.
Right.
I mean, oh, I think, yeah.
When they cook bacon in the hospital, the smell permeates throughout the whole hospital.
Right, right. Well, talking a little bit about research and things, you know, the follow-up study to the initial 20 patients from Forks Over Knives came out a few years ago, and Dr. Esselstyn published this in the Journal of Family Practice. So oftentimes, people always want to know about research and research and research, and I always just say, look at everybody around you. They're sick, fat, dying, or on medication. And so they took 200 follow-up patients, and they gleaned that down to 198 patients. And of the 198 patients with cardiovascular disease, 177 patients were adherent to a plant-based lifestyle. That's 89%. Okay? Of those 177 patients, 0.6% had a recurrent event. Okay? Of the 21 patients that were not adherent, 13 patients experienced an adverse event. That's 62%. So I think it's really, really simple that you look at places in the world that don't eat like we do. They live longer and healthier and more vibrant. You look at the food that we eat in the United States and what are some of the biggest medical centers, heart disease, heart institutes or heart hospitals, cancer institutes. Mm-hmm. You know, you think, what else do you need? I think what is happening is that people are looking for other research that says, oh, butter is back, or bacon really isn't, you know, bad for you. I mean, if you want to sell a book that
says butter is back.
Bacon is good for you and butter is back.
Well, and that's why, you know, I can't tell you how many people I know that are overweight to some extent and that are always on a diet. Always. But they're always looking for the latest diet that says they can continue to eat
cheese nachos,
bacon and cheese and butter and eggs, because those are the things they want to eat. They just want to know that they can. They don't want to be overweight anymore, but they want to know that they can still eat those foods. You know, and we talk about this way of eating. If everyone has paid attention to anything we've said today or in our previous times, we don't talk about this as a diet. We don't.
No.
This isn't a way.
If you see
if
how
you're
much food
overweight,
we eat.
Just to lose weight. No, I eat and I eat lots of food.
Right.
It is about, and it's not just about losing weight, because that to me is a side effect.
Right.
It is about being healthy, being vibrant. I want to be 70 and 80 years old and still have as much energy as I do today, or even, you know, longer. But I want to live longer, not die longer, as Randy says.
That's right.
And so while we're finishing up here, what I want to say to those interested in maybe changing their ways is keeping it simple. This isn't, what we're talking about is not complicated. You know, it's amazing to me that you go along your life and you're eating a standard American diet and you're eating the bacon and the eggs and you're going through the drive-thru and you don't think twice about it. But the minute you change to eating plants, you want to know, are you getting enough protein? Are you getting enough vitamins? Are you going to, you know, there's a million things now that you have, you think you have to worry about. And I tell people, no, you just need to eat real food.
That's a great segue into the, I was going to have a little segment called Seriously Silly Facebook Posts. And so here's one of them. It just really hits home with what Andrea is saying. So someone says, so we haven't started our whole food plant-based diet yet. Okay. Which means to me, I'm trying to find a reason not to.
Yes.
Right? But plan on it. We are already adding in more veggies. I just saw a post where people were talking about eating more carbs than protein. I'm concerned about this for my husband, who just had a six vessel bypass and is diabetic. Everything we're hearing from his doctors is more protein and less carbs. And I'm like, okay, all you've done is just muddy up the water. And she posted a picture of her and her husband in the hospital. And I'm thinking, it doesn't have to be difficult.
And that's a whole, that would take a whole other segment to talk about, you know, the protein
but
and
that
the carb.
Is a message that the patients get from doctors.
Right.
My dad, before he passed away this last spring of heart disease and kidney failure, was in dialysis, and the dietitian at the dialysis center told him he had to eat more meat to get protein.
Right.
It was the meat that killed his kidneys.
Right.
And I wanted to strangle that lady.
Yeah.
But I backed off and said, you know, I'm not going to.
Well, I just feel like we don't worry about those things. I mean, when you're eating those things, you're not worried about, am I going to get heart disease and cancer and all those things?
Right.
So keep it simple. Don't worry about that. Eat real plant food.
That's why I tell people to focus on the food and forget the nutrients, because we get so caught up in this carbohydrate versus protein versus dietary fat. But if you really focus on the food, you don't have to worry about the nutrients. The protein is going to take care of itself. We don't need a high-protein diet. High-protein diet kills us, and especially a high animal protein diet.
Well, it is. It's interesting, though. Like, I'll have people say, well, I don't think I'm getting enough protein. And I'm like, well,
What are the symptoms
that's happening to you that you don't think you're getting enough
protein? It's called cravings.
And I think that's it. I think they're starting to withdraw. And so they're maybe getting headaches, or maybe, you know, maybe they're hungrier. And so they're eating more food and they're thinking, oh, I need to have more protein to satiate my hunger. You know, the food sometimes we eat doesn't have a lot of calories. When you eat a lot of kale and
spinach
and vegetables, I mean, they may not be calorically dense, and you may need to add things like beans and grains and avocados and seeds and nuts to gain a little more satiation. But it has nothing to do with a lack of protein.
Right.
So
it's just amazing.
A lack of me not getting my drug of choice, which is that foot-long cheese coney or hamburger from wherever.
You know, I used to tell people before I changed the way I eat that I knew nothing about addiction, you know, and I apologize to people that are suffering from a chemical addiction like alcoholism, because, you know, I really used to think, gosh, it's been like 5 or 6 years, you know? I mean, do you really need to keep going to those meetings? And I truly understand what those people go through now, because, you know, you walk through the mall and you smell that Cinnabon, mm-hmm. and you go to a place
where you smell the bacon cooking, like we talked about,
and barbecue, and I think, you know, there's a reason why that smell triggers such thoughts of euphoria and hunger and those things, and I don't think those things ever go away, you know?
Right.
And so it really is.
So you're telling me when you walk by a barbecue joint and smell the smoke, your mind goes to thinking that barbecue sure tastes good.
Absolutely.
I know. Mine does that same thing. But now that I have some education.
Sure.
You're able to get past that.
Oh, gosh. Yes. And I almost, you know, it's almost a me versus them thing. I just think, it's just, you know. And I don't see any places in the world, any parts of society, any cultures that are heavily laden eating something like barbecue that are living and thriving at 100.
I don't either.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I don't know what it is about the smell of barbecue being cooked.
I think it's
time for lunch around here because I think we're getting off into some...
But it does trigger, I mean, it's what I talk about in our seminars about food addiction. It works through the chemical dopamine.
And that may be a great, and I need, Randy, make note of this. Addiction Duly might noted. Be a good topic for our next broadcast because it is, I mean, it is real. Food
right.
addiction is real, just like any other addiction, whether it's drug or alcohol or anything else. And so I think that would be a good topic for our next discussion. And, you know, food addiction is just something that's more acceptable in the United States.
So we're announcing the opening of our food addiction clinic here in the fall. Yes.
But let's wrap it up here real quick. I want people to know I want to talk about, you can go to plantbasedokc, all one word, .com, get information about our seminars and our upcoming wellness events. You can stream our previous radio shows on there as well. And this radio show will be up probably by tomorrow, and you can share that with your friends. You can follow us at Plant-Based OKC on Facebook if you happen to be on there, or on Instagram. That's where I post information about recipes and just food ideas and things, just to help give people an idea of what we're eating and how simple it can be. So we would love for you to follow us on there. We encourage you to maybe watch the documentary Forks Over Knives if you're interested. It's on Netflix. It's I think it's on Amazon Prime. I don't know that you can
get
watch
it at the library.
You can get it at the library. There's another documentary that we were in this past year, and it's called Eating You Alive. You can go to eatingyoualive.com and you can download a link to rent that for $3.99 or buy it for $9.99. And you can order the DVD if that's something you're interested in as well.
And we don't make any money on that.
No, that is not something that we definitely participated, but not something we get any financial.
Now, our food addiction clinic, that's going to be a different thing.
Yes. I can't wait to open
it. Exactly. You're going to be the director?
Exactly.
Yeah. We're being facetious. Because I wish we had a clinic.
I
think it would be amazing.
I do, too.
I need to win the lottery first.
That's right. Okay.
So listen to us again on the fourth Tuesday of April, and we will see you again soon. And
hope to see you at Rococo Monday night.
Yes, absolutely. And for Kathy... Live life on purpose and with purpose.
Amen.